The action surprised him, but he caught the weapon all the same. "Nothing," Kali said, leaning into the cab and attempting to start the motor. "Not a fucking gig. Well, shit. I mean, the engine's made of metal." She reached down and popped the hood. Gus looked off in the distance, watching the fleeing pickup and trailer fade into the distance. The sound of an approaching vehicle distracted him. Bruno and Corey stopped their truck beside him. Bruno lowered the window and grimaced at the sight of the crippled ride. "Dead truck?" he asked. "Dead truck," Gus replied. "Well, that sucks, Beaver Hole." That nasty bit of expletive goodness stopped Gus for all of a heartbeat, but then he joined Collie at their mangled vehicle. The bullets had ripped through the thinner metals of the motor. Smoke wafted from different points. The bullet holes inside the cavity resembled hot splashes of chrome. Connecting rods were dented and twisted. Severed wires dangled. The battery had taken a round straight through the heart. Fluid from multiple tubes dribbled onto the pavement, and the smell of burning rubber and acid was strong enough to back Gus up a step. "Anyone got any duct tape?" he asked in a defeated tone. "Later," Kali said, focusing on the abandoned pickup and cargo trailer left on the highway. "After we check on that trailer." Gus looked at the far-off truck. "Let's ride, amigos," she shouted, then opened the rear door of Bruno's cab.
"What about our gear?" Gus asked, going for the other side.
"We'll come back for it after we check that thing out." Timmins stood tall in the distance, an angular patch of brooding towers and apartment boxes stamped against the skyline. Gus didn't like the look of the city. Didn't like the feeling of dread percolating in his guts. That feeling had started that very morning when he was squatting over a hole dug in the ground with a little garden shovel. They'd gone off-road to avoid all the abandoned cars on the highway and stopped at a clearing in the forest. It was around then when the shouting rudely interrupted Gus's morning constitutional. The following gunshot got his bowels moving again, however, with explosive urgency. The far-off laughter that followed had creeped him out. If a skeleton could laugh, it probably sounded like that. Thinking back, Gus realized the last 3 days had been easy. Too damn easy, in fact. Sure, they'd had a few tense times, rolling through the smaller cities, crossing over the St. Lawrence and skirting around Ottawa came to mind. But ultimately nothing had happened. They'd driven on through a dead landscape, through a world slowly being reclaimed by a greedy Mother Nature. "Okay," Kali said, sitting on the other side of two hockey bags of supplies. He could only see her profile and the upper section of her assault rifle. "Right here, Cor." Corey braked hard and stopped the truck alongside the trailer. He parked the machine with a hard shove of the stick. "All of you stay aboard," Kali ordered. "Get ready to leave fast if we have to."
"You expecting trouble?" Bruno asked.
"I'm always expecting trouble," she said, and got out.
"God knows we're finding it,"
Gus muttered, and got out on the other side, and landed boots first in the gore spattering the pavement.
"Well, fuck," he groaned in distaste, eyeing the bloody mess.
"What?" Kali asked.
"I'm standing in fucking blood over here."
She didn't answer. Instead, she approached the deserted truck with her drawn sidearm. She didn't take her rifle, and Gus knew it was because of her left arm where she'd been shot through the bicep a few months back during the firefight at Whitecap. Even though the wound had healed, the arm hadn't regained its full strength, despite Maggie's physical therapy sessions. As a result, Kali could only carry and use her rifle for short periods of time. She had no problem with her pistol, however. Sig Sauer aimed and ready, Kali approached the truck. Gus hung back, having learned the hard way that she was bossy in tense situations. She'd reminded them repeatedly that she had a shitload of experience in these kinds of operations, but Gus suspected the operator was being extra protective of her civvy crew. Not that it offended him. But it did make him feel about as useful as a dick stitched to an elbow. Kali neared the driver's window. She checked the interior, deemed it clear, and switched to the rear seat. Once satisfied, she moved to the trailer. Kali scanned the long container, then peered underneath the carriage. She ran a hand along the exterior, stopped at the rear doors, then locked eyes on Gus.
Before she could speak, she was interrupted by a rustling from inside the trailer. Gus's eyes narrowed.
The hell was that?
There's people inside this thing, Kali said. Saw them through the air holes.
Air holes?
Yeah, air holes. But not too many. Can't have the meat too uppity, right?
Kali shook her head.
Just stay back for a second.
The sound of a power window lowering filled Gus's ears.
Hey, Kali, there's people inside that thing, Bruno exclaimed.
The operator sighed at the egregious breach of silence.
Yeah, I know.
What's going on? Gus asked.
We're gonna find out.
She winked at him. Gus had to admit he felt some funky goodness when she did that. He followed her around the truck and nearly stepped on a corpse with the splayed-out hair of a hard rocker. Kali stepped over another dead man and patted down his sides. She reached inside the carcass's pocket and pulled out a set of keys. Voices reached Gus's ears, muted somehow, as if gagged, like those poor bastards lying on the pavement with the hockey masks. One mask had been twisted aside, revealing half a face mashed into the asphalt and what looked like a cord of leather lashed around his head. Gus looked away, feeling it was far too early in the day for such pictures.
You gonna get them out? Bruno asked from his passenger window.
Yes, I'm gonna get them out, Kali answered. Just stay where you are for a minute, okay?
Bruno nodded, but Gus wasn't sure he believed him. Kali focused on the trailer doors.
Relax in there, she called. We're gonna get you out.
The grunting intensified, and if Gus wasn't mistaken, the grunting didn't seem too keen on the idea. Kali noticed it as well. She stepped back, her weapon lowered. She motioned Gus to come closer, and when he did, she handed him the keys.
Open it up, she said.
She stepped back and took aim at the doors. Gus rattled the chains locked around the two doors. That plugged screaming went up several notches. The padlock in his hand, Gus shot Kali a questioning look.
I don't know, she answered. Hold on a second.
She went to the trailer sidewall and peeked into an air hole.
Jesus Christ, Bruno hissed. You guys smell that?
I smell that, Gus said and covered his mouth, knowing human waste when he smelled it.
They're bouncing all over the place in there, Kali reported. They're real excited about something. Can't see everything.
Jesus, sounds like a dozen weightlifters in there blowing out their ass rings, Gus said.
Kali winced at that. Gus released the unlocked padlock, and the resulting clatter generated a second group scream from within the trailer. He flinched at the suppressed squeals of terror and backed up a step, trading looks with Kali. If the people inside were energetic before, they were going insane now. The trailer rocked on its chassis from an unseen barrage of physical contact, as if bodies were launching themselves at the walls. All that frantic motion seemed to lift the stink originating from the trailer and flap it in Gus's direction.
I got a feeling I'm gonna see something I don't wanna, he said.
Probably, Kali agreed.
Clear to open this thing?
Wait.
She stepped in close to the trailer.
Relax in there, okay? We're going to let you out.
An excited outburst answered her, and it did not sound happy.
Something's wrong, Gus muttered.
Sure is, Bruno said from the truck. They're trapped in a trailer of their own shit, and God only knows what else. They heard gunfire, and they don't know who we are or what we're gonna do to them.
Yeah, there's that, but... Gus rubbed his head. There's something more here.
Sensing the same, Kali holstered her weapon and inspected the trailer doors, even as the rocking trailer threatened to fall off its own chassis.
Walks, she said under her breath, and examined the upper section of the frame.
She leaned in and ran her fingers along the closure. A frown creased her features. When she reached the center of the door, she stopped. Her eyes went wide.
Well now, she whispered. Aren't you the potential party shaker?
Find something? Gus asked.
Kali?
You find something?
I did, dear.
Gus knew when he was being fucked with, so he shut up.
until she extracted her boot knife, whereupon he gave her all the room she needed. Collie checked her footing and climbed onto the rear step of the trailer.
Gus? She asked.
Yes, dear? That stopped her.
Don't you put a smile on my face.
Not now. Sorry.
Do me a favor. Tell the folks inside this meat locker to keep still for a few seconds, okay?
Orders received, Gus approached the sidewall, noting how shadows flittered beyond the air holes. The stink of the trailer swelled, becoming so bad, so wickedly foul, that he dreaded opening his mouth.
Hey.
Hey! He shouted. He cringed, absorbing that unspeakable cloud and feeling his tongue curl.
Keep it down in there, okay? Keep it down. Relax, for Christ's sake. I mean, oh, God damn, you guys ass fuck a skunk in there or what?
That settled matters down considerably. The trailer's rocking subsided to a tentative wavering, as if there were a dozen people standing far too close to a bomb. The last thought froze Gus on the spot.
Collie?
Yeah?
She asked as she worked her knife into the door crack. Gus cleared his throat.
Are we in danger here?
You want the truth?
That stopped him.
Sure, why not?
And at that exact moment, she squeezed her eyes shut, grimaced, and gently plucked at something unseen in the door. Gus froze. Collie opened her eyes, saw that all was well, and smiled. She pulled her knife free.
Nope, she exhaled.
Gus looked back at Bruno, whose expression morphed from worry to shit-chugging relief. A short time later, Collie stopped searching.
All right, she announced to those inside. I checked out the doors here and found what I suspect might have been a tripwire for an explosive device. Is that correct?
Energetic grunts answered her. Gus felt his balls lift a notch.
Okay then, Collie continued. You'll be happy to know I've disabled the tripwire. At least I think I've disabled it. To the best of your knowledge, and scream if you know this, is there any other trap?
The trailer became silent.
All right then, she said.
She motioned for Gus to open the doors. He picked up the padlock. Collie immediately retreated about a dozen steps. Gus questioned her with a look, to which she shrugged. He scowled and inserted the key and hesitated.
Fuck it. Gus thought, and turned the key.
11. If the smell was bad outside the trailer, the stink that wafted free of that opened box was a malevolent, life-stealing wave, redolent of diseased graves and oozing gangrenous wounds. That colorless swell enveloped Gus, and he involuntarily turned away and covered his face.
Oh,
was all he could manage. That breath-snatching foulness struck Collie as well, and she visibly faltered as it rolled over her. Once the fresh air cleared that pent-up bubble of filth, the operator steadied herself and approached the trailer. Knowing he was going to have nightmares, Gus straightened and peered inside the trailer confines. Dried excrement littered the corners of the trailer, particularly near the doors. There were five people in there, their hands behind their backs and hunched over by the low ceiling. They wore jeans, sweaters, and thick shirts, but no coats and no shoes, wearing either socks or just barefoot. All five of them wore ball gags, the leather straps tight around their heads. All five were also chained about the ankles.
You're all right, Collie gently informed them. Just hold on for a minute more.
Two men, two women, and a young girl, perhaps 10. All were filthy, as if they'd been dunked in a septic tank. Black smudges stained their faces, and they stared at their rescuers with wide, hopeful eyes, perhaps wondering if they'd just been saved or captured by someone much worse. Gus swallowed thickly, muted by the sight. The little girl in particular seized his attention. She looked underfed and 30 pounds lighter because of it, with her brown hair long and filthy and sticking to her head in a flat sheen. The sight broke his heart.
Gus? Collie asked.
Yeah, he whispered.
Watch the roads, in case that bastard decides to come back with friends.
A part of him, the angry part, hoped that bastard would indeed come back. Collie carefully leaned into the trailer, looked up, and inspected the inner lip of the opening.
"Well, well," she said, "look what we have here."
She reached up and fiddled with something. A piece of metal wire clattered to the floor, which she ignored. She eventually lowered her hands and held them out to Gus.
"Black pearls," she said.
Gus studied the two black objects, both the size of golf balls.
"What are they?"
"Grenades. Metal pins here, see?
Like Christmas ornaments."
"Yeah, except these will do much more than just sparkle."
"Yeah?"
"Oh yeah," Collie assured him. She picked up the fallen piece of metal and studied it. She then opened a jacket pocket and deposited the sliver and the grenades inside.
"That's safe?" Gus asked. "Like that, I mean?"
"Don't ask." She looked at the prisoners. "Can you guys walk?" 3 out of 5 nodded. "Okay, walk towards me then. Take it easy now." They did, the chains restricting them to shambling forward like the dead things that once ruled the world. They squinted in the daylight, and Collie, despite that crippling smell, helped each one to the pavement. Overcoming his horror, Gus lent a hand, gripping arms and easing each prisoner to the ground. Once they were out, he couldn't help but stare at their wretched condition. Mittens of duct tape bound their hands and wrists. The smudges upon their cheeks and around their eyes were really bruises, black and purple and vicious. Blood caked the nostrils of one woman. The clothes they were wearing needed to be torched and replaced. One of them stumbled to his knees and bent over with a whimper. That sound alone unlocked the emotions of the other captives. Red eyes, the ones not swollen shut, watered up and moistened battered cheeks.
"You're okay," Collie repeated as she moved among them. "You're okay. Don't worry. I'm gonna get you loose. Don't worry."
The fob Collie had taken from the dead hard rocker included keys for the chains. Once the shackles were off, Collie pulled out her knife and freed the little girl first.
"Gus, get some water, will you?"
Collie's request activated him, and still in a daze, he walked to the back of the truck and retrieved 5 jugs of water. Collie helped the survivors with their ball gags, working on the more stubborn straps. One guy came close to puking when she removed his gag. As soon as they had those wicked devices removed, the 5 stretched and massaged their jaws. Gus held out the water jugs until each of the survivors had one.
"Thank you,"
croaked a man with one remarkable shiner, his voice raspy from either screaming or dehydration, or both.
"Don't drink that too fast," Collie advised. "Just take a mouthful."
The man with the shiner did just that. His hands shook until Collie helped steady them. One of the women dropped her jug and broke down crying. Gus wavered and looked at Collie.
"All right," she said, studying the wretched group. "You're out of there. Take a few minutes. Drink some water. When did you folks eat last? Are you hungry?"
"Not hungry,"
said the one lady who remained composed the longest, though she sounded physically and mentally wasted.
"They fed us. Thirsty, though."
The guy with the black eye spotted the dead men lying on the pavement. His mouth became a tight line.
"There's one more,"
he said.
"We know," Gus told him. "He got away."
"Yeah, he did."
"Are you going after him?"
Gus looked at Collie.
"Are we?"
"No."
That bit of information caused the man to slump in exhausted disappointment.
"We should leave then,"
he finally said.
"They talked about others."
"Others?"
Collie asked.
"Yeah. We were..."
He stopped to swallow, his throat bobbing.
"We were going to be sold to someone. Called the Leather for all sorts of shit."
"Sell you?" Gus asked.
"Yeah. Sell us. He called us merch. Merchandise. Cargo. That's why we stopped here, I think.
He looked around, grimacing.
"I think this was the meeting place."
Gus and Collie traded looks.
Gus then zeroed in on distant Timmins and that straight runway leading towards the city. There was no sound of engines, however, nothing to indicate any approaching danger.
Maybe we should get going, an uneasy Bruno suggested. Just to be on the safe side.
The operator, however, didn't appear to have heard. Gus knew what was going through her head. The same thought was going through his own noggin. That one missing bastard was unfinished business.
Yeah, Collie finally said. Get them aboard.
Aboard what? Gus asked. We only got the one ride. Unless we take this, he said, indicating the truck and trailer. Already hitched and get the fuck out of here.
He could tell Collie wasn't keen on asking the group to get back into that cage.
What about the one who got away? He asked.
Gotta let him go. But hey, we nailed three of them, right? And got these people out. So that's all good.
Suppose so.
All right, Collie said, regarding the group of survivors. I've got good news for you and some not so good.
You want us back in the trailer,
said the one woman who had kept her composure. What's your name?
Eva.
Eva, I need you and everyone else to get back into the trailer.
Eva stared.
We don't have any other way of transporting you, Collie explained. Our second truck is dead. And if you stay here, you risk being captured again, especially if the one who got away comes back with friends.
Eva's shoulders drooped.
All right.
And though none of the freed survivors were pleased, they climbed back into that filthy box one more time.
Here, Collie said and handed over the padlock. We're not locking you in. Hold on for a few minutes more, okay? Gonna close the doors here.
She nodded at Gus. A palpable vibe of fear and uncertainty emanated from the little group, one that Gus didn't want to aggravate. He closed the doors all the same and promised himself he'd be the one to open them. One look from Collie showed she wasn't too happy about shutting them back in their cage either.
We'll take the lead, Collie said to Bruno and Corey. If you guys see anyone coming back from the city, flash your headlights, okay?
Where are we going? Bruno asked.
No idea. Collie looked at Gus. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's boot.
They hurried to the Raptor and climbed aboard.
Jesus, this thing smells like ass, Gus said, sour-faced.
Total ass, Collie agreed. A lot of that going on today.
Now you know why I'm such a nut about toilet paper.
I never questioned the toilet paper thing. One of these days, I'll tell you about what I had to do while on a 72-hour S&E sometime.
S&E?
Search and evade.
That did sound interesting.
I got a surprise for you, Gus said.
Check the back seat.
She looked over her shoulder and saw what he had noticed in the rearview mirror. A couple of sheathed medieval swords set upon racks in the rear window. There was a gun belt as well. Beneath it all was a landslide of clothing, probably more dirty than clean, and a collection of coolers. The truck's key fob rested in the tray next to Gus's knee. He had no trouble firing up the machine.
Fuck me, Collie muttered. I hate putting them back in the box.
Yeah, I know, Gus said and swung the rig around. Not much we can do.
She didn't answer, focusing on her side mirror.
Damn it, Gus ejected as he righted the truck. Collie, we have to get our shit out of the truck. We got gas cans back there.
And food, and our other gear.
Yeah, do it.
The world sped past them in an 8-cylinder huff of hybrid power, only to quickly decelerate when Gus pulled up beside their dead vehicle. They both jumped out.
Keep watch, Gus shouted at Bruno and Corey. We got shit to unload.
Bruno got out as well, and in the next 5 minutes, they transferred everything of value from the pickup to the cargo trailer.
Water's there, Gus told the people they'd rescued, pointing to the jugs. There's grub, too, if you want it.
The sight of all those worried yet hopeful expressions nailed him through the heart, distracting him from the nerve pain lighting up his damaged foot. He hoofed it back to the cab, keeping an eye on the city on the horizon. Still nothing. He had a nagging feeling, though, that he was going to see something he wasn't going to be happy about.
Okay, he said as he got in and slammed the door. All done. You snapped in?
All ready, Collie answered. Hit them jets.
The two trucks accelerated and raced away from the scene. Behind them, the city remained indifferent. 12.
Top Gun drove through the clogged streets of Timmins, constantly checking his side mirror to see if he was being pursued. He wasn't, much to his surprise, so he eased off the gas. He couldn't drive too fast anyway. There was simply too much unmoving traffic filling the roads, so he slowed down and threaded his way through an overgrown subdivision called Greenwood Place. The empty cargo trailer obediently followed his every turn, but goddamn didn't it feel like an anchor hanging off his ass. He intended to pull over the first chance he got and unhook that beast from his bumper. Timmins had once been a green city, an eye-pleasing union of plant and urban planning. At least it had been. Houses and garages scrolled by, mailboxes, even a playground, along with once landscaped thickets of greenery that in the absence of their municipal landscapers had grown to full-on jungle. Dead leaves and twigs covered the road, creating a crispy carpet of decaying foliage. Top Gun intended to follow the Trans-Canada 101 all the way to the 17. He had enough biodiesel to get to Manitoba, but after that he wasn't sure what his options were. God help him. O'Leary didn't seem so bad now that the whole crew had been wiped out. Without his crew, he was just one hired gun on the open highways in an eroding wilderness that was being quietly carved up. And it just so happened his most recent contract was with the one dominant player responsible for most of the cutting. The leather. That troubled him. Greatly. And like summoning some mythical urban monster, no sooner did he think the name when a string of trucks filled the road ahead, navigating their way through a four-way intersection. A shiny convoy of black pickups and vans hauling trailers that blocked the only way out of the city. Effectively fucking up Top Gun's escape plan. He hit the brakes. Well, shit, he thought. He surveyed the convoy and realized the forsaken cars and trucks had him hemmed in. He couldn't back up fast enough, not with the trailer in tow. There was a motel and an open parking lot just ahead, which would have been the best place to turn his rig around. Trouble was, there were about 5 trucks between him and that open space. And the trucks weren't slowing down, just the opposite. They sped along as if smelling fear. Or meat. Top Gun had an idea of where they were going. Just his luck, they were early. With a defeated sigh, he put his machine in park and took his hands off the wheel in a gesture of surrender. Men stood in the box beds of the approaching rigs, their faces hidden behind black leather masks. Top Gun knew why. And despair flared within his chest, as frightening as a plastic bag being pulled tight over one's head. The trucks pulled around him in the street, completing a noose. 2 of those rigs hauled cargo trailers, much like the one Top Gun hauled. 1 truck stopped directly before Top Gun, not 5 feet from his grill. Through the rest of the small army, he glimpsed an honest-to-God fuel tanker. Engines revved. Figures watched him from their cabs. Some of those masked individuals wore goggles, as if the masks weren't frightening enough. Fuck it, Jolly Jake whispered from the grave. Just fuck it. Easy for you, Top Gun whispered back, counting the number of heads watching him. He eyed the nearest masked driver of the leather. One of the leather, anyway. Top Gun never got a name for the imposing road clan other than the leather. Not that it mattered. They were definitely more disturbing when they referred to themselves as a collective. Perhaps that was the intention. An ominous figure emerged from one of the pickups. 3 more got out behind him. All of them wore black, sweaters or t-shirts, and matching coats. Some of the coats were full-length dusters, though some ended at the hips. All 3 men sported padded shoulders and masks. Boots clicked on the pavement as the foursome drew closer. Top Gun kept his hands up and visible. No one else moved, at least not the ones he could see. They all watched him, however, and for a few seconds Top Gun felt like a prize trophy in the middle of a safari. A shadow fell over him.
The tall, intimidating representative for the leather leaned into Top Gun's window.
"Aye,"
Top Gun greeted in a wary tone, noticing the individual's wide shoulders. The leather did not reply. The leather wore a mask fashioned in the guise of a vulture. Top Gun wasn't sure if the material was indeed leather or plastic, foam or rubber, but the guy had blackened the skin around his eyes right up to the lids. A weird vibe nudged Top Gun's head the other way towards the passenger side, where another representative of the leather stood, aiming a loaded crossbow at his face. That mask looked like a glossy special from a kinky sex shop, with visible stitches running from the temples all the way to the back.
Remember me? Top Gun asked, turning back and not daring a smile.
He had a feeling if he did smile, if he showed any teeth whatsoever, a dart the size of a Roman pilum would be fired into his ear. The vulture mask didn't answer.
We had a deal, remember? 5 of us? Find some new meat and bring them back to you?
Top Gun hesitantly pointed over his shoulder.
We were supposed to meet back there, at that recharging station. Change of plans. We had a problem. A couple of problems, really.
The vulture continued to watch him, his eyes narrowed in either suspicion or dislike, or perhaps both. That made Top Gun even more nervous.
Anyway, he said, licking his lips. Long story short, I'm the only one alive. Just me. We were attacked at the recharging station. Jake and the Jipman, and Muffin Shit O'Leary, all got killed. Anyway, more bad news. Those meat puppets you lent us? They all died too. Same way. Same shooters.
Sure, Top Gun was fudging the details, but he didn't think Jake would mind, and there was a chance it would save his own ass. The leather didn't respond. We found some new meat, Top Gun continued, feeling it prudent to fill that ominous silence. One was a little girl, even. But, sorry, there was too much heat. In 5 seconds, I was the only one left. Everyone else was bleeding out on the asphalt. It was insane how quick everything went down. 1 second, Jake and I were talking, and the next... The vulture didn't move, didn't blink, and for a moment, Top Gun wondered if he were talking to a person or a physical manifestation of some vengeful Egyptian god. It was unnerving. A truck door opened, and another leather got out, decked out in a long duster that reached the ankles. The figure was narrow of shoulder, but when he straightened, his head easily rose above the vehicle's roof. His mask was colored bronze, with black rivets instead of stitches, while his mouth was a series of painted slits that smiled from cheek to cheek. The bronze stepped away from the door, further showing off that slender frame, and the black duds covering him from neck to boot. The bronze leaned to one side, his pose asking a question.
So, yeah, Top Gun remembered the vulture at his window. Yeah, I had to leave my crew back there. Gave up a truck and the supplies aboard it. Had to. To distract them, right? So I could get away. I managed to get a few shots off. No kills, just nailed their truck. Strand them out there. But I didn't press my luck. Best to get out of there in one piece, find you guys, and report in, you know?
The vulture showed no sign of knowing. In fact, the vulture showed no indication of understanding or even having listened. After a few seconds, the mask directed its attention to the bronze towering over the pickup. With the barest of limps, the bronze went to the rear of the vehicle. That imposing scarecrow rooted around in the pickup box. Metal scraped metal, like a meat hook scraping the bottom of a steel barrel. The sound was a little more startling than Top Gun cared to admit. That was when the vulture slowly, purposely, reached out and gripped Top Gun's face. Like a soot-mottled spider, the vulture's hand fastened to Top Gun's mouth and chin and turned his head toward that unsettling mask. Top Gun's breath shot out his nose. The vulture's grip was strong. The black eyes within the mask narrowed.
A little girl? the vulture said in a voice neither deep nor high-pitched, but damn near gender-neutral. Through squished lips, Top Gun got out,
"Yes."
"And you lost her?"
"Yes,"
Top Gun blinked.
"Sorry."
The vulture did not relinquish his grip.
"That disappoints us."
"I'm sorry." Top Gun's anxiety spiked when the bronze pulled an axe from the pickup box. It wasn't just some tool for chopping wood. It was an honest-to-God executioner's tool appropriated from some medieval castle. A wicked blade hung from a long shaft, the steel blemished and curved and well-worn. Top Gun's breath caught in his chest. He wondered what that freak was going to do with such a head splitter. The bronze held the weapon in one hand but did not come any closer, as if waiting to be summoned. The leather with the crossbow stood unwavering at the passenger window.
"We will show you," the vulture continued, still holding the man's voice, "what it means to disappoint us."
Upon some silent command, the bronze approached. Top Gun's periphery picked up other figures moving in, already free of their vehicles. They closed in as quietly as wraiths, surrounding his truck. The vulture released him just as more masked men opened Top Gun's door. Hands pulled him out and forced him to the ground. They swarmed over him in an oily, multi-limbed carpet. He didn't struggle, didn't dare make a sound, for fear of tempting a fate worse than death. The leather pulled back, securing Top Gun's limbs and head, stretching him out like a man caught in a disturbing web of hands and arms. The bronze loomed overhead. The tall figure not only held the executioner's axe, but a length of material dangled from his other hand. Top Gun whimpered. The bronze held a ball gag. 13.
"So where are we going?" Gus asked, fingers tight on the steering wheel, his eyes locked on the road.
"Well," Collie answered, looking away from the side mirror, "any place not here and preferably off-road. We want distance between us and the city. We need to find somewhere to hunker down for the night, hear their story, and go from there."
"Go from there?" Gus asked dubiously.
"That's right. See who they are, where they're from. Who knows, they could have been taken from some little cabin on a hill somewhere."
"Didn't you and Wallace scout this whole area?"
Collie smiled.
"We couldn't check off everywhere. Ontario's a big place. Quebec's bigger. Searching for people is an ongoing process. People move around, people hide. Crazy things happen in between."
The road sped by as Gus processed the information.
"So we stop somewhere and
start asking questions."
"All right. Where?"
They were on a straight strip consisting of only two lanes. Tangles of vegetation threatened the road on either side, stopping at the edges of crumbling pavement. Tall patches of forest passed by, smoothing out into great swaths of meadowland. A small bridge spanned a river, and the truck bumped over it. A few houses popped up along the way, but they were too visible, too close to the highway. There was no real place to hide.
"Keep driving," Collie said. "One thing about the boonies, there's a shit ton of back roads. All we need to do is find one."
She glanced into her mirror.
"Looks good back there."
Gus hoped it stayed that way. They drove through the town of Matheson, which resembled most of the other quiet little towns that had been plowed over by chaos. Gus followed the gentle curve of Highway 11, turned south, and scanned the forests for a suitable place to hide. Plenty of dirt roads linked up with the main drag, leading off into the sometimes open wild before disappearing into distant woodlands or hill country.
"What about there?"
he asked and braked, slowing down for a gravel road on the right. It cut through a wall of birch and fir and disappeared some 30 feet or more from the pavement.
"Looks fine to me."
"We go? 'Cause if we go and that road ends in a dead end, we're potentially fucked for getting back out."
"Guess we'll find out."
Gus flicked on his indicator to give Bruno and Corey the heads up. He turned off the highway, the tires lurching as they left the pavement.
The road wasn't a good one. The surface of the moon was probably smoother. Several times he checked on the trailer, fully expecting to see the five survivors tumbling out the back of the thing. He slowed to a crawl, and that didn't improve the ride. In a way, it was worse. The slow-motion rise over the rocky terrain and the inevitable crash into potholes became a stomach-turning repetition.
"I'm gonna puke," Gus muttered as the truck took another sickening dip.
"Glad you said it first."
"You too?"
"Oh, I'm clenching over here."
Gus didn't like the sound of that.
In his side mirror, Corey and Bruno followed, bouncing along. Their windshield was dark from the overhead foliage, but the grill gleamed through the dust.
"Jesus Christ," Gus muttered, unimpressed. "You see the dust clouds back there?"
"It'll settle down," Collie said, bracing herself. "It's worse for the folks in the trailer."
"Yeah, I suppose it is."
A shallow stream crossed the road, and Gus slowed to a rolling stop. The pickup still thumped through the waterway, despite his best intentions.
"God damn," Gus managed. "Must have been a rough winter."
A marker consisting of a few black tires with bald surfaces was stacked in a clump of wild grass. The road narrowed and curved left and right. The forest crowded the caravan on either side, reaching out and brushing the vehicles with long strokes. Branches were plied back and released with whipping force.
"This is gonna fuck up the paint on this thing," Gus said.
The road grew even narrower, but the truck pushed through. The trailer bumped behind them, and he hoped the thing didn't unhitch. He kept his speed at 20 kilometers an hour, but that did little to lessen the sensation of being shelled by artillery.
"This is going nowhere," he said.
"All roads go somewhere," Collie countered.
"Yeah, but this one is going nowhere, and we're going to find ourselves at the very end of it very soon."
They rocked and rolled over a few jagged teeth erupting from the ground. They cleared great shards of rock, but felt none too good about it, for they knew they'd probably have to come back and brave them again. Deeper they went, twisting one way, then the other, rising over small hills and descending into shadowy dips. "This thing is going fucking nowhere," Collie muttered, one hand clutching the overhead grip.
"Look," Gus said.
Ahead, the forest opened up, just enough for them to notice. They eased around a bend and beheld a bungalow perched atop a low hill. Several opaque panels coated the structure's roof, causing it to gleam in the daylight. A very wild-looking garden of considerable size surrounded the home and lined the slope. Weeds invaded rows of untended crops. Apple and pear trees grew on the north end, much of their fruit piled in rotten heaps around the base of each trunk. A shed came into view, situated on the left, and a stack of what appeared to be red clay pots rested against the wall. An orange tractor was parked near a ramshackle corral, its gate left open.
"Well, well," Gus said. "Someplace after all. About time, too."
"Looks like a little off-the-grid bomb shelter," Collie added.
"A lot of those around."
Gus stopped the rig and leaned forward, sizing up the house and surrounding garden.
"Bet this was all owned by some long-haired hippie freaks living off the land and all that. All about growing their own food. See the roof?"
"Yeah, sonar paneling. Very shiny."
"All over, even the shed."
"Someone was thinking."
"Probably more like fuck the power companies," Gus said, and reached for the door. "Wait here."
"I'll go," she countered, her sunglasses already in place. Collie got out and gently closed the door. She walked for a few paces, stopped, and scanned the layout. Then, with one hand on her sidearm, she hiked toward the house. There was a dusty SUV up there, its white nose peeking around the corner. Gus spotted it when he leaned to the left. He scratched at a cheek, pulled on his whiskers, and thought about the folks in the trailer. Damn if he wouldn't be shitting himself back there, wondering what was going on. Especially after what they'd all been through. That didn't sit well on his conscience. He opened his door and got out. Corey and Bruno watched him from their rig, stopped 10 feet from the trailer. Gus walked toward the trailer doors, and after a moment's hesitation, knocked.
"Hey," he announced. "It's me, one of the people who saved you.
No response.
So anyway, I'm gonna open the door here. Give you some fresh air. That's all.
Without waiting for an answer, Gus opened the door. Daylight fell across the filthy black floor. He peered inside and stopped to take a breath. Despite his best intentions, he was unable to cope with the smell, which was still a plank to the head.
Oh.
Gus bit down on his first impulse of Christ and titties and took a moment to reconnect with his thoughts. The five inside pressed themselves against the rear of the trailer, clearly wondering what his intentions were.
Just keeping the door open, okay?
Gus took two steps back, then a third.
Just hold on a few minutes more. My friend is checking out a place to see if it's safe for us.
Where are we? Eva asked in that detached tone of voice.
South of Matheson, on an old road.
She didn't ask anything else. In the growing silence, Gus wasn't rightly sure about what to say or do. He settled on the jugs and coolers taken from their dead truck, which were untouched.
You didn't try any of that? I mean, the water's just water, but there's some homemade bread in there, along with preserves and butter. Everything's homegrown. Even some salted meats in there, which are pretty good, I must say.
The guy with the wicked black eye looked at Eva.
Who are you?
Eva finally said.
I'm Gus. Hi.
Eva didn't return the greeting.
Where are you from?
East Coast.
Just the four of you?
Gus hesitated on that one, suddenly wary.
Yeah, just the four of us.
That's risky.
Yeah, why's that?
There are crazies all over the place. Some more organized than others.
Yeah, we know. Where are you guys from?
Eva didn't answer right away.
That's fine, Gus said. I understand. Dangerous times and all. Don't worry about us, we're good people. We're just worried about you folks.
Why would you be worried about us?
Eva asked pointedly.
Because, you know, we don't know who you are, Gus answered honestly, a touch of sadness in his tone. Hard to know who you can trust these days, right? Sometimes it takes a while.
Eva didn't answer, but the guy with the shiner nodded with understanding.
How you doing there? Gus directed at the girl.
She didn't answer.
What's her name? Gus asked the guy with the shiner.
Don't know. She was here before us.
How'd that happen anyway?
We were looking for someone,
the guy with the shiner answered.
The four of us. One of our people got lost and we went out to look for him. Camped out overnight, and when we woke up, those men you shot, they were waiting for us. In the kitchen,
the other woman whispered.
In the living room, said the other man.
Yeah,
the guy with the shiner said.
After that, things got bloody.
What's your name?
Davis.
Gus nodded.
All right, so there were four of you, and you don't know who the girl is.
We were gagged. Couldn't talk anyway.
Gus supposed so. He lowered himself until he caught the little girl's attention.
You got a name there?
She stared back.
Nancy?
He tried to no avail.
Lisa?
Monica?
Lulu?
Lulu, he thought in disdain. Fuck off, brain, if that's the best you can do. He regarded the others.
So she was already here in the trailer?
Davis nodded.
Yeah, she wasn't too happy about it. Stayed there in the middle, away from the rest of us. What's your name?
Eva asked the girl without much enthusiasm. She didn't even get a look.
That's what she settles into, Davis explained. That look right there. Not on the verge of freaking out like before, just watching.
Shock, Gus realized, remembering Collie's assessment. The adults had recovered faster, it seemed. Maybe it took children a little longer.
All right, Gus sighed. He stood, trying hard not to stare at the little one. The girl was filthy. Her long hair hung in tangled cords, partially hiding the right side of her face. She wore socks, but they were in tatters, her toes and black heels showing through. She wore baggy jeans and an oversized sweater that had once been white, but there were so many smudges in the material Gus shuddered to think what she'd been rolling in. All right, he repeated, and took a step back, unable to take the smell any longer. Oh my lord, how the hell can you people not smell that? I mean, sorry. I'm sorry. Feeling the heat in his cheeks, Gus removed himself from the rear of the trailer. He stepped onto a gravelly shoulder where the grass reached mid-thigh. Just get out and move around if you want, he said. None of them wore shoes or boots, so he figured they wouldn't run off. And if they did, they wouldn't get far. There wasn't anywhere to go. Thing was, none of them budged at the invitation. Collie appeared then, coming out of the house on the hill. She waved them toward her. Okay, you guys, Gus said. We're going up there. Hold on. He didn't bother closing the trailer doors again, believing nothing short of burning the thing would remove the smell. 14. Two bodies occupied the main bedroom, their heads close together and facing each other as if whispering secrets or performing some Inuit throat song. They lay together on a queen-sized mattress with sheets decorated with prints of pink roses. Black matter stained the headboards in an explosive decal. Everything had dried, but Collie still made it a point to cover up the couple. Married, she'd guessed, from the wedding bands, and to close the bedroom door behind. Both bodies had decomposed into tatters, the skin dried out into cheap leather. The husband had a shotgun in his lap, tucked under his chin and thumb on the trigger. The result was a charred crown of skull and skin and a black spot of gore that was going to take more than one scrubbing to clean. Before he died, he arranged the arm of his dead wife around his shoulders. Or so Collie described. Gus didn't bother looking. Didn't want to think about the backstory of the couple. Collie directed the five survivors into the living room where there was a surprisingly comfortable wraparound sofa set and twin recliners. Whoever the dead people had been, they'd had cash and had spent most of it on their furniture. Once the survivors had been given some time to relax and process the events of the day, Collie ordered Corey to grab a mop and scrub out the trailer. Water still flowed from the kitchen tap, amazingly enough, which he attributed to an underground well and a still-functioning pump. Even the lights worked. Think it's safe to use those? Gus asked quietly. If we're here for the night? Oh, we're here for the night, Collie said. Best to stay out of sight and decide where we go from here. After we process these folks. Gus, Collie, and Bruno gathered in the kitchen, located only a few steps away from the living room. On the whole, Eva and the others seemed to be awakening to the idea that they weren't prisoners anymore, and that they were, for the moment, in a much safer place. Gus leaned against a stainless steel fridge. He glanced at Eva and company lounging on that luxurious sofa set, and that picture granted him a few seconds' worth of contentment. Then he returned to Collie. You mean question them? You got it. Gus mentioned his conversation with Eva and the man with the shiner back at the trailer. They got lost, huh? Collie repeated. All right. Good. I'll keep that in mind when I start in. Where are you gonna do all this? There's a den in there, just before the bedrooms. I'll take them in one at a time. Gotta say, this place is nice. Three bedrooms up here and an extra one down below, along with a big old rec room. Three bathrooms, complete with TP. TP, Gus smiled. Thought you'd like that, Collie said. Then became all business. Okay, I'll get working here, but there's something I want you to do. All right, Gus said to Corey. How's that look to you? Collie's makeshift alarm system with the bottles and cans lay across the road, right at the tree line marking the perimeter. The string would be invisible at night, and certainly give them plenty of warning if someone attempted to creep up on them. Looks okay, Corey said.
I'm just not sure we need them. We should hear anything coming up that road long before we see them.
I said the same thing to Kali. She wanted to have this just in case someone decided to get out and walk.
Corey nodded at that.
All right, Gus said. We're done here. Let's move those rigs behind the house, get them out of sight. Then we can see how those interviews are going.
2 hours later, daylight was gone. Gus sat at the kitchen table with Corey, while Bruno conversed with the survivors in the living room. A sparse light provided by a single lamp on a coffee table lit the room. The curtains had been pulled across to hide that little glow of civilization. The quiet reminded Gus of his childhood, when winter storms knocked out the power and drove his family to the basement. There they would gather around a warm wood stove and talk about whatever, waiting out the night until power was either restored or it was time for bed. Kali questioned Eva last. The other woman's name was Allie, and the man without the shiner was named Clifford. Gus still didn't know who the girl was. She remained content to sit by herself in a recliner, staring at the ceiling with hooded eyes. She had glanced over when he came back into the house, but nothing since. Bruno eventually sat down near her, and the man's long winter hat caught her interest. He sensed something amiss and turned to see the little one staring at him. Not one to shy away from conversation, Bruno stared back for a few seconds before realizing that he would need to bring out the big guns. He picked up a backpack and reached for a jar of homemade raspberry jam.
"Something on my face?" he asked the girl.
She kept on staring, her expression blank.
"Something here?"
he asked and touched his nose. No response. Bruno dabbed his finger into the jam and touched his cheek.
"Here?"
he asked, leaving a ruby print. The little girl frowned.
"How about here?"
he asked, dotting his chin. The frown became a smile that broke through the dirt and filth covering her face. Her teeth were strong and good-looking, but in need of a cleaning.
"Oh-ho, that's the problem," Bruno said, and scrubbed at his whiskers. "All gone?"
The girl's smile dimmed just a bit, but he had her attention.
"What's your name?"
Bruno asked, studying her. No answer, just that same kid at the edge of a wharf expression, hoping, waiting to catch sight of a whale.
"I'm Bruno," he said, and cleaned his cheek a little more thoroughly.
He tasted the jam and brightened.
"Oh, that's good stuff. Real good.
The folks back home made this.
Want some?"
Indifferent to the offer, she glanced away.
"Here,"
he said, and held out the jar. She didn't even look.
"No? That's too bad. That's real good."
And it was, but the girl clearly wasn't interested.
"What's your name?" he asked again.
That sank it. The pleasant little happy face disappeared. Bruno watched it go and didn't like what appeared. The opening of a door distracted him, however. It distracted Gus as well, and he turned to see Eva appear in the hallway, her features ghost-like. Kali followed.
"Well, everyone, thank you for your patience," the operator said. "Very much appreciated. Guys, I think we found a new group of friends."
"That's so?" Gus asked.
"Very much so. There are just two things we have to do."
That quieted him, and he picked up on the looks traded between Corey and Bruno.
"We have to get them home," Kali said, "and talk with their leader."
Gus leaned back.
"Sounds good. We can leave in the morning."
"Yeah," Kali drew out. "About that. Eva and I were talking. She has a request to further show our own good intentions. Remember that guy who got lost? His name's Carson. He's the one who went out to look for parts in Matheson and never came back. Been gone for a few days when Eva decided to organize a search party. They went to the same town and searched for Carson but couldn't find him. Right so far, Eva?"
"That's right,"
she replied in a subdued voice.
"And that's when they found themselves ankle deep in the shitter with those lunatics I shot earlier."
Gus wasn't exactly sure where all this was going, but he suspected he wasn't going to like it.
"So," Kali said, She asked if we could look for him, find him and bring him back, after we bring her and the others back to their home base.
Look for him where? Gus asked.
We can try Timmins, since that's the direction those crazies were headed.
Head out again? Corey asked.
Yeah, a little side mission.
That quieted the three men.
Gus met Collie's eyes. He knew there was something more going on for her to deviate from Whitecap.
He's a mechanic, Collie said, answering his unspoken question. And a budding electrician. Grew up around cars and trucks and branched off from there. Apparently he's responsible for their little power grid, am I right?
You're right, Eva replied.
So he has one of those important skill sets we need to get back on track. Eva and Davis and the others have each made it clear that their little community of about 24 people are keen about having access to a doctor, even trade, perhaps. But they want to find out what happened to Carson first and whether or not he's alive.
Gus looked over at them. A mechanic?
And electrician, Davis added. A jack of all trades,